Hello and welcome to DM Radio. My name is Vincent Price Cavanaugh, and I'll be your host, humble if unholy host, for the show that is designed to peel away the fleshy marketing veneer, get down to brass tacks, and hopefully help us all get a better grip on this world, this paranormalized world of information management. Yes, folks, we have a delicious show for you today on DM Radio, or on this All Hallows Eve, should we call it Demon Radio? Yes, we have several spooky guests lined up for you today. Robert Eve, as in evening, from Composite. We have Renat Kashanchan, whose name I probably butchered. And we have Jim Fowler from Jigsaw. Reminds me of a horror film or two. And of course we have our co-host and editorial director, Jim the Spookykin Erickson. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Eric. I think we have a very scary show for our guests today.
Yes, excellent, excellent. I'd like to give a big shout-out to our sponsor today, the Virtual MDM Summit. It's like an MDM Summit, but you can't touch it. And yet it's oh so real. If you don't register, it will haunt you for years. Yes, we have scary stories today, so we're going to hear about some scary stories of information management and what you little ghouls and goblins can do to prevent it happening to you. So my cohort and denizen of the deep, Mr. Erickson, what scary stories have you for us today?
Well, I think I will drop out of my Dracula and ignore my Peter Lorre and go straight to my regular voice, Eric, because I think we've pushed that button a little hard already. But it should be a fun show today. You know, the whole IT horror story, scary story, you know, it's like there are urban legends out there. I mean, these things really exist, and they fall into various categories. I think a lot of people are used to sort of the, you know, LAN, WAN, SAN kind of network disasters. You know, I remember when I started with my company, I'd worked remotely for 3 years and came into the office one day, and suddenly my computer became the master browser and took over 1,000 computers inside the organization. So you have those kind of nightmares, the usual, you know, the security things. You know, then there's always the famous upgrade and the famous quote with being, you know, the change was so simple he didn't think he had to inform anyone that it took place, and the mistake he made was so stupid he had no idea of the damage it caused. You know, so these kind of things are absolutely profligate. When you get up to more the, you know, the area of information management and sort of the tactical and strategic, you know, layer, I think a lot of these kind of tragedies or horror stories come out of the, you know, the ready, fire, aim philosophy that a lot of people apply to problems in their business world, where they have an inventory problem or a supply chain problem or a content problem, and the immediate reaction is to fix it with a chunk of technology. Which results in 12 months and millions of dollars and the same problem all over again. So we seem to be telling these stories a lot. And then, of course, in data management, you know, Bill Inman likes to talk about things like data graveyards, where data goes to die, basically. And then the maintenance of these things and how it affects companies and their business processes and their policies is an ongoing story. But there are some classics out there. I hope we hear some of them today.
Oh, yes, and we all know that there's no silver bullet out there, is there?
Well, we know there's a ghost in the machine.
There's a ghost in the machine.
In some cases, we know of, you know, more recently things, you know, new technologies bring their own horror stories. You know, we talk about things that are shaking out like cloud computing, of which I'm a proponent and an advocate of. But, you know, as with anything new like this, you have things like, you know, Gmail going down, for many, many people, or Amazon S3 going down, you know, and you sort of start looking at the consequences of some of the sort of the new frontier of business and technology, and you come to realize that, you know, we're going to see more of this, and it's, you know, what's your motto? Well started is half finished, or something like that. What's the one you say?
Well begun is half done.
Well
yes.
Begun is half done. I think we can tattoo that on our monitors here. So let's carry on.
Well, and it is a little creepy when you have all of your data up in the cloud, and you hear these horror stories of laptops, for example, being stolen. And I guess before the Olympics, you had the guy from the British Secret Service, whose BlackBerry was stolen or something like that by an attractive young Chinese lady, I'm told. So, like, these scary stories, they're all over the place. And
we're learning lessons, and I don't think we're ever going to stop. You know, I think chaos theory applies here to some degree. But a lot of it is also a question of risk management. And sometimes you don't understand what risk management is until you're affected by it. Of course, the greatest, you know, just to be serious for a moment, the greatest real tragedy was 9/11. And what that taught us about backup and redundancy and site locations and, you know, now you see these security centers are built 12 floors off the ground to prevent to avoid the 1,000-year flood. You see all kinds of emergency backup and power failover redundancy stuff built into these things. And yet we're never really going to protect against some of these freaks of nature or acts of man. But we will always be documenting human stupidity or pilot error, if you will, as we work our way through this stuff.
Well, and you know, as you tell that story there, you remind me of a tragedy, an information management tragedy, if you will, that was fairly near and dear to my life on this planet when I lived in New Orleans, which I've done three separate times. I've moved to and from New Orleans thrice, land of voodoo and Marie Laveau and all that fun stuff. Well, the lady who was elected to be the clerk of the circuit court kept all of the records for all of the trials in the basement in a building in New Orleans, which we all know is below sea level. And so then Katrina's floodwaters came in and flooded the basement and flooded all of those records.
Well, there's just so many examples like that, you know, whether we're talking about hard records or computer records, I think. And, I mean, just your example, imagine the amount of information and data that was lost, some of it very much permanently, you know, deed records, land records, court filings, you know, estate filings, all kinds of things that were absolutely, you know, critical to the lives and well-being of people, you know, all over the area. I don't know if you could even calculate what that cost.
Yeah, I'm sure some people looked at it as an opportunity, of course. You know, what's the old Chinese proverb? Chaos is the same word. The same character used to describe chaos is also used to describe opportunity. So when all that stuff disappears, you know, hey, what? You know, it is an opportunity for someone out there. But, you know, we actually have a disaster recovery show coming up, not next week, but the week after that, so we can get into some of those scary stories as well. And I think your point is well taken, that we've learned a lot of lessons, you know, about backing things up, about secure access, you know, security features built into laptops, built into databases, you know, governing the access to information. But, you know, you can never think of everything, and there's always going to be you know, someone who can kind of circumvent the firewall and figure something out. So, you know,
and you know, there's also just the basic internal disaster story or scary story of, you know, that we confront every day of different silos of information being configured in different ways and recording things in different ways. And, you know, the whole data quality issue could be ascribed to a lack of cohesiveness or agreement or governance when it comes to, you know, and this is the greater part of the problems that companies are facing with data management. It's not so much in the technology. I always say the technology does pretty much what it's advertised to do, you know, performs its job. And people look at technology as either a panacea or a scapegoat when these things go wrong. When in fact, we all know that it's the business processes, it's the business policies that have steered you down this road that says, you know, oh, technology is going to be able to fix all this for us. Now, of course, there's, you know, data matching technologies and things like that that can really help us along the way. But the political and, you know, the soft skills of being able to communicate and align lines of business. I was just writing a column last week in DM Review that these are emerging as the really critical job skills these days. That, you know, if you're a programmer or a tester or a DBA, I mean, those jobs start sounding analogous to outsourcing. And it's really the soft skills of, say, you know, sitting in the head of HR, but understanding the reporting system and being the person who gets back directly to the data governance committee, who understands the politics of the organization and seeks to keep bringing that, you know, more into agreement. It's interesting. We had a group of panelists with Jill Deshaies and Dan Power, Aaron Zorns. We're all saying that these are the kind of roles that are going to be safer going forward, that are going to be the real sort of command and control points of information in the organization, because we're moving away from this notion of networks of applications and databases and towards this idea of networks of information. And that's really where people are incredibly important.
Yep, yep. And those are those risk management jobs that we've been talking about in governance. We're hearing all about governance, risk management. Of course, that's all related to compliance. And, you know, speaking of related scary stories, one of my good colleagues, Philip Russom, he sent in a rather colorful email that kind of makes a nice segue and a little closing story for our opening segment here. He said it was a dark and stormy business day just a mere 6 weeks ago when disaster struck. Like a meteor storm from hell, stocks and commoditized debt funds were falling from the skies. Like a virus from outer space, their fiery tails infected boardrooms and 401ks across the planet, turning all kinds of people into zombies. It was as if most of the world's business population was transformed into a massive herd of deer all caught in the giant headlights of the financial meteors. In zombie mode, people went through the motions of conducting business, but nothing was getting done. Even worse, all decision-making, especially planning for next year, was put on the back burner because white-collar zombies live in the moment, unable to conceive of a future.
Oh, brother.
Oh, it's almost done. Like any respectable virus, however, it ran its course. A few weeks later, people started coming out of zombie mode and renewed their business activities, this time with an eye to 2009 and the future beyond. Data warehouse queries and analytic reporting hit an all-time record volume. Of course, there's another virus coming, the presidential election. So let's only hope that that we can survive that one without too much trouble.
You know, and that really does bring up a metaphor. You talk about all these derivatives that were scattered out all over the place. It's kind of like Night of the Living Dead, where the hands start coming out of the ground all over the place because you really didn't know how many there were out there until they were created.
Yeah.
And then just sort of came up to keep pulling down the rest of the financial system.
Well, that is, and you know, talk about risk management and governance and so forth. I've almost wondered if that collapse does not represent the ultimate failure of compliance, because here the government is trying to scare the daylights out of corporations everywhere with these compliance mandates, Sarbanes-Oxley, HIPAA, and other such mandates, and you know, specifically with respect to Sarbanes-Oxley, knowing how much money you have, where it is, what the process was for documenting it, so on and so forth. And it's like, while they're holding this big hammer over business, what happened? We turned around, and it was actually the federal government that had not done a good job keeping tabs on.
I think that's a hugely biased opinion, Eric.
You think so?
I think that, oh, of course. These people were building these securities. They knew what they had. It, you know, that's a totally pro, you know, I don't even know how to characterize it. You know, there's plenty of blame to go along, but to say it was the government's fault, you know, this is why regulation is returning. You know, the government did strip regulation, but this is the exact reason it's coming back, because, you know, the higher goals of free market capitalism turn into their own horror story.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, all I'm saying is that here the government is basically looking down on these companies, saying you have to remain compliant. And it seems to me that the government itself did not. There were some regulations. They were not heeded. They were confusing at best. I mean, like I said, like you say, there's plenty of blame to go around. But, you know, let's face it. I mean, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac collapsed.
Yeah,
and
the government did not create those instruments of debt. They did not.
Yeah.
They did not. They weren't the managers. We can go round and around on this, but we should probably move on to our guests. So I'm looking forward to hearing what they have to tell us
today. Okay, folks, stick around for 1 minute. You're listening to a very scary DM Radio. Hold on.
Hey, DM Review readers. Make sure you're getting the most out of DMReview.com by clicking on our custom channel categories at the upper left of our homepage to get the information that's most useful to you. At DM Review, we know our readers very well, and we've organized our content into convenient categories for business intelligence, performance management, data integration, analytics, governance, and many other topics to suit your needs. At each channel page, you'll also find related information to assist you in your quest for information. Of course, we also offer a robust and advanced search box so you can refine your interest in our content as you see fit. And if your search for the right information ever falls short, you can write or call DM Review Editor-in-Chief Julie Langenkamp directly at 262-784-0444, extension 215. At DM Review, we know information is your business, and it's ours too. Visit us at dmreview.com.
Okay, folks, welcome back to DM Radio, Scary Stories of Information Management. We have our first guest lined up today. Our first victim is Robert Eve from Composite Software. Robert, welcome to DM Radio.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks, Jim.
So, you have some scary stories for us about the softer side of things, is that right?
Absolutely. I think there's a... You know, Jim really spoke to this issue of the soft issues that sometimes come to play and create scary stories, because the business policies and the people kind of sometimes can run counter to the technology strategy, even though you do the technology right. We have a case study of one of our customers who's a large mutual fund company, and they seemed to have done everything right on the technology side. They really put together a large integrated enterprise data warehouse of all their financial research information, over 8 terabytes of Oracle data in their warehouse, and then they centralized all that data and made it available to their over 100 financial analysts, who then support the portfolio managers who run the different mutual funds and portfolios. Well, in spite of doing all that, putting everything in place, when the analysts wanted to test out certain portfolio strategies, instead of running the, querying the database and with their analytic tools, MATLABs and the like, they'd pull the data out of the warehouse and put them in these little rogue data marts where they just kind of felt like they could control it a little better. And, it was just easier for them to kind of play with it and share it with their colleagues and that sort of thing. So given that didn't make sense from an IT point of view, IT said, well, geez, you guys shouldn't do that. We put all the time and focus into the warehouse. But IT had a tough time telling the financial analysts no, because of the way the business policies were and the people who made the money in the mutual fund or the portfolio managers. And, there's certain politics involved in that kind of situation I think Jim spoke to. Well, IT was really smart in this case. Not only had they done a good job putting together their warehouse, they provided one of those best offenses is a good defense strategies, and they decided, instead of telling the financial analyst, no, you can't pull your data into these little marts, they gave them an alternative. And so they took a DBA who really understood the warehouse very well. They took a business analyst who was good at interacting, they identified a business analyst who was good at interacting with the financial analysts, and then they put in place our software. It's kind of a commercial there, but they built views in our software, and so that any time the analyst needed to access some new information in a new way, instead of the analyst going in and doing the work to access the data and then analyze it, they worked with this DBA and this business analyst, and they would put together very quickly, 10, 15 minutes, they'd put together the views that the financial analyst needed to then perform their analysis. Well, the financial analysts are like, well, that's great. I'd be stupid not to get the help. And I didn't want to build these marts. I mean, it was kind of fun to have these marts, but I didn't like fighting with IT over who was going to support them.
Sure.
And you know what? I'm spending less time on access and more on analysis, so I'm doing a better job. And it was sort of a win-win all around. So I think the whole point of the story is, towards Jim's, I think, earlier point, even though you do the technology right, in this case they built this gorgeous data warehouse and put all the controls in place and had all the data and it was all high quality, etc., sometimes on the softer side, the people side, there's disincentives for using the right using that technology well. And if you just kind of line up a few more of the people and process things around it, you can get it to work, people process and some complementary technology around the strategy, you can get rid of that scary story and turn it into one with a happy ending.
Yeah, and I guess
I'm hearing a few things right there,
yeah,
Robert. The notion of these sort of ad hoc processes, these workarounds that pop up, was the initial problem because the IT department couldn't turn around the reporting, or was it because the analysts wanted to keep this information sort of to themselves?
Well, in some ways, the analyst, being so smart, you know, these really sharp Carnegie Mellon and MIT financial analysts.
Right.
They could do their own access. They didn't have to rely so much on IT. So in a sense, they just kind of, you know, why would I bother, you know, with that? And you know, once I pull it over into my machine, I can kind of work with it. And then I, you know, it's just kind of a, you know, they just, I mean, that's how they'd all, they, you know, they just were kind of used
know, this,
to independent
this,
thinking.
It sounds just like, you know, kind of what I heard from eBay a couple months ago at TDWI, a really interesting presentation. Where they create this sort of sandbox environment for people to work in, and it's really counter to sort of the organizational goals of IT, and it maybe contains some risk because of information moving out in different ways and coming back in different ways, but their attitude is a data mart can't be cheap enough to justify its existence, you know, and that's a total shock to a lot of people, I think, but they're talking about, you know, short quick prototyping, you know, fail fast, move on, kind of a philosophy that's more of a political kind of philosophy in the company than it is a structure that IT likes to fall back on when it comes to projects.
Well, and this is why the virtualization approach, the federating of the data, works so well, because you don't have as much overhead in terms of, you know, persisting the data in the you know, the little data mart. You can just virtualize it as required, and when you're not using it anymore, those views just sit around as models. I mean, there's no cost there.
That's another plug and all, but I know that different companies are gonna take a very cautious approach to this versus some that are just gonna trying to be at the forefront of what's happening now in their organization instead of always being behind the curve. So I don't know what the spectrum allows. Eric, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about this before the show, and I've actually kind of followed some of this virtualized type of technology for a while, and I think it really does offer a lot of value in a couple key areas. One is in the process of designing a new information system, a new analytic app, for example. So it's almost like you use it to do a test run to see, okay, is this data that we want? Is this going to serve the purpose that we need? And once it's blessed, then you go out and you actually change your ETL routines and you do stuff like that. But it creates kind of a nice sandbox to play around in and see what's going on out there. Is that a safe assessment, Bob?
A lot of people use it that way.
Yeah.
A lot of people do. And, you know, and the funny thing is this is a case where it's even the next stage, where they've actually done all the ETL. It wasn't that the data didn't exist. It's that the people pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
Of the safe, secure, controlled place, and replicate it over into some other place. It starts to get out of sync. Immediately now, there's more these little marts to support. There's these extra costs that IT starts to pick up, and the company starts to pick up.
Right.
It's an odd sort of case.
Yeah. Let me throw this one out at you real quick. Because this is an interesting debate that we have going on right here with, you know, sort of the virtualized way versus the more traditional hard-coded, heavy-lifting way of doing things, which is where you get all the performance, right? Because if you do sort of the virtualized realm, it's the performance is what's going to suffer in comparison to more of a sort of a tightly woven solution. But, you know, what's interesting to me is thinking that this whole concept of rogue systems, of rogue IT, shadow systems, if you will, to go to our Scary Stories theme, I've always had something I like to call the black market effect, which is to say that if you impose rules that are too strict or too stringent, you are basically encouraging people to work around you, to circumvent you. So if you have, you know, for example, a data warehouse with a lot of access controls and it's all very governed and tightly monitored and managed, what's going to happen is people are just going to go some other way, and they're going to create maybe some of the virtualized views that you're talking about. To get back to the softer issues, what can you recommend to companies to find some way to get a balance between that extremely stringent view of the world and that completely loose view of the world, such that you find sort of a harmonious balance in between? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, well, I think part of it is to provide people with options, and there's no reason why the virtual approach should be out of control. In this case, it was totally in control. They had a DBA and a business analyst really, creating optimized views for the business analyst. So I think, in a sense, this concept of either or and black and white is just too simplistic. I think you're right that people need to have some gray area. So why not, as an IT organization, why not provide legitimate options in the gray?
Yeah, and doesn't it just sound like the transition we're making very slowly and unevenly toward self-service? I mean, you know, even an analyst will tell you driving in a ditch gets you halfway where you're going. You know, you have to, isn't it just part of a progression that we're going through in this way?
I think that's a really good point, Jim. And part of it is self-service. Part of it is time compression, agility requirements. You know, as we all know, business has sped up a ton in the last 25 years, and it doesn't look like it's slowing, plans to slow down any more in the next 25. So you see a lot of drivers, and in addition, I think some of the technology silos and problems continue to change. You mentioned, kind of, Eric, the idea of, well, the performance and this and that. Well, what if your business problem is a kind of a wide, shallow kind of requirement, not a deep analytic?
Right.
So, you know, in that sense, you have different performance characteristics on the query.
Right, right.
And what if the latency is at, you have the different latencies between, you know, when the data actually gets recorded and when the data is available for somebody to act on and the time that it takes to act. Those latencies need to kind of be considered on a solution-by-solution basis. Again, gray area. And I think, you know, the opportunity for IT is to have all these tools and capabilities and provide them to the end users as in a self-service fashion as possible, or be rapid in what IT it does itself.
Yep. Okay, folks, we're up at our next break, but stick around for 1 minute, and we'll be right back. We're going to interview our next guest from Jigsaw. So hold on 1 second, folks. We'll be right back. You are listening to DM Radio.
Where do serious professionals turn for the latest news and advice on data warehousing, business intelligence, and information management? They turn to DM Review Magazine and DMReview.com, the Bible of the industry. For 20 years, DM Review has provided readers with timely, practical, and useful thought leadership for today's managers and information workers. DMReview.com offers thousands of topical articles, white papers, and exclusive features. These are not the same old recycled ideas you'll find elsewhere. DM Review keeps you current with fresh faces and new ideas on emerging topics such as analytics, customer data integration, master data management, and service-oriented architecture through columns, newsletters, web seminars, and live radio broadcasts. So if information is your business, you can't afford to be without DM Review. Visit us at DMReview.com.
Okay, folks, welcome back to Demon Radio. I mean DM Radio. I am your host, Vincent Price Cavanaugh. With me is our next guest, Mr. Jim Fowler from Jigsaw. I love that name, Jigsaw. Why don't you start us off, Jim, telling us what Jigsaw is and what you guys do.
Sounds like a horror movie, doesn't it?
It does.
If you just shorten it to
four,
if you just shorten it to Saw, you're right.
Oh,
there,
that's
right?
That's what I'm thinking of. Okay. All right.
Well, Eric and Jim, it's a pleasure to be with you. Jigsaw is a what your listeners would understand as user-generated content. We have a community of over 650,000 business professionals that build and maintain a directory of company and contact information for B2B data and B2B marketing. So unlike traditional data companies that build and maintain their own database, our 650,000 members build and maintain our business directory, if you will.
That's really interesting. It's sort of a virtual world, and I guess you have sort of a graveyard of records, don't you?
Exactly. There's over 10 million contact records, what you would see on a business card. And when one of our members comes in and finds a record that is the person's gone from the company, we call that a dead record, we have our members put it into the graveyard, and you can actually see that record with a gravestone on it, so it fits the theme of today's today's broadcast perfectly.
So really what you guys do, in a sense, is it's almost like an outsourced data quality solution, right?
Well, when you go to Jigsaw, what you see is kind of the community site where you basically buy and trade business cards. And the system's based on points. You need points in order to get the data off that you need for direct marketing, sales, recruiting, et cetera. And you get points by adding or cleaning the database.
Huh.
So we make money by selling by selling subscriptions to individuals, selling points to individuals, but where we make most of our money is doing back-end data cleaning and management services.
So you charge companies to do that. They'll come to you, for example, and say, we have a customer database of, you know, maybe a million records or something, and what do you... Do you basically just map their database against yours and you append their database? Is that it?
That's exactly right. So we'll go match. And the key thing to understand about our data is that we won't allow a member to add a record that is incomplete. So when a record gets added to Jigsaw, it has name, title, phone number. Usually 72% of the time we have direct dial phone numbers, an email address, and a direct mail address. So the main problems that we solve, and I'll stick with your theme, is what I call the four horsemen of the data apocalypse. And what those are: incomplete data, incorrect data, dead data, and duplicate data. And because our members have the incentive to come in and tell us when it's dead, we don't allow incomplete data on the system in the first place. And because we've got 650,000 people in a kind of wisdom of crowds way, automating this data in real time, we can feed that back to our customers by going in and matching their data. You know, the horror stories that we see are literally 90%+ on average. We actually have customers that have 100% of their data will be either incomplete or incorrect. And that's just because people are lazy. They don't like to do data entry. And this data changes at a fast and furious rate. So what we do is we go in, and the first thing we'll do is match. We complete their incomplete data, which means that we make 90%+ of their records better just right out of the gate. We'll correct it when it's incorrect, and then we flag their dead records. And the average number of dead records that we find in a database is fully 25%.
Wow.
And that's very, very expensive for these people to touch dead records, either by direct mailing them or even more expensively, picking up a phone and calling a dead record.
Hmm.
You know, Jim, this is amazing to me, because when I look at my email inbox or my mailbox, my mail slot in my door, and I see three catalogs from a company I did business with 9 years ago, I'm starting to wonder, is it that they just don't care, that they're just, you know, that they're just fulfilling quotas and getting stuff out the door on time, or is it that they don't know, or is it that they can't manage this kind of stuff?
Well, data management is a major league pain in the rear end, as I'm positive, you know, every one of your listeners knows. I mean, it's not a core competency for most companies.
Not the brick and mortars, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Well, even technology businesses, you know, managing the fundamental, what I call the foundation stones of their B2B database, basic company data, basic contact data, you can't affect a business relationship without that data. And there's lots of metadata that you deal with, but for Jigsaw, all we care about are those two foundation stones. And I think that it's just hard, and that's really the problem we're trying to solve. But for everyone, you know, this data changes. So the world is getting more dynamic every day. Companies change faster and faster. People switch jobs and titles faster and faster. It's just very difficult to keep up with. And I think that's, you know, you're seeing that. The most mature part of this, of course, would be, you know, telephone and direct mail. And, you know, email is starting to really become a more mature business as well. So I don't think it's that they don't care. I just think it's a really hard problem to solve.
Yeah, I guess I was looking for the dirty little secret, you know, the postman, you know, chained in the basement or something, you know, to for you. When I look at that mail dump that comes through on Thursday or Friday afternoon, I'm just appalled, you know.
Yeah.
At what's going on.
Well, the reason you're getting those multiple catalogs is because they've got three duplicates of you in their database.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, that's the real issue. And going in and actually deleting data or consolidating those records is a very, you know, it's a tough thing. And so what we always do, of course, is just flag the dupes and say, hey, we think this is a dupe, but they just, you know, they're so cautious, you know, holding on to that list is a key thing for the
right.
the marketers.
Right. Well, and it's probably also a factor in, you know, to their investors and to other people to say, look at all the names we have in our database, right?
Oh, exactly.
If you go and start...
I really think that what you're seeing is a shift here, and that I think that most people have finally gotten the clue that I have to have technology and a system to manage the data. And that's where in the CRM business, companies like Salesforce in particular have really created a concept that, hey, I don't have an excuse anymore to not have a system to manage this data, but you can pick whatever system you use to manage your B2B database. In other words, I can afford it now because I don't have to pay a big, huge dollar chunk up front. I can pay as I go. And, gee, I can't, you know, I don't have enough technological expertise to install and maintain a system. Well, great, you can have it as a service. And I think the next wave you're going to see is, hey, okay, I've invested in a system. The system is only as good as the data that goes in and out of it. I mean, garbage in, garbage out. And I think you're going to see more and more maturity in the industry as we go. The next wave is the data management side.
Well, it's just interesting that you're taking this sort of social networking Web 2.0 approach to data quality. I mean, it strikes me as being just about as efficient a service as you can come up with, you know, with the one caveat being that, you know, if you're letting other people out there append these records, I mean, I would imagine that you have the threat, if you will, of going backwards, meaning someone updating something that's actually downdating it, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't finish that last part, Eric.
So in other words, instead of updating, they're actually downdating, if you will, or reversing some of the progress. How do you avoid that?
So what we do in our point system is our members get rewarded for doing good, and they get spanked for doing bad. It's not just get points for adding it, but you actually get a point penalty and a hit to your rating in an eBay-like way if you put bad data in.
Yep.
So the best analogy out there, I think, is Wikipedia. It's the one that your listeners would have the most experience with. And, if you know, it really helps to kind of look at the history of Wikipedia. And there's this curve that I call the good enough curve. And when Wikipedia started, it didn't have very much content on it, and what was there was pretty cruddy. But every day, more and more people came in, and that kind of wisdom of crowds got better and better. And I think if you were to fast forward to today, you have a system that for just about everyone, except for those that want a common editorial voice, the content is not only bigger and deeper than what you would get on, say, an Encyclopedia Britannica, but it's also, in head-to-head veracity tests, equally correct. So every database is going to have bad data on it, and Jigsaw is certainly no exception. It's just we believe that, in fact, we'll prove it, our data is far better than data that you could manage yourself on the whole, and certainly far better than any closed and proprietary company could try to manage on their own.
Sure.
So I think the key thing is that when you have these really vibrant communities that continue to grow, every day the data gets better and better and better.
Good work.
I had one last point on this, Eric. I know we got to go to a break here, but I think this point about being rewarded, getting points, that kind of thing, it totally points back to, I think, something we're going to be confronting more and more going forward is performance-based compensation. I mean, people do the jobs they do because they were hired to do them. There's no incentive for them not to do that. And the same thing applies to data quality. If it's a call center where people are being told to just get through more calls and just hustle the information in, or if it's in the data quality process itself, I think we have to, you know, I think we're going to see more and more of measuring people on those outcomes as opposed to the original job descriptions because that's moved.
Yeah, go. You want to respond to that?
I completely agree, Jim. I think if you think about Jigsaw, it's basically a comp plan. 70% of our members are salespeople. 20% are recruiters, and 10% are marketers. And the marketers come in and buy our lists. They buy the cleaning services because marketers are usually the ones that are tasked with maintaining the company's database, at least from an outbound perspective. Certainly there's inbound stuff where they have to maintain it as well. But I completely agree. You have to – every community or every system has its own set of reasons and motivations why people do things. And for us, we're not a .org like Wikipedia. There's not a bunch of people on here, you know, doing this because it's creating this, you know, gigantic encyclopedia in the sky. These are, you know, very focused and professional salespeople, recruiters, and marketers that, you know, they want something for what they do. So I think you're right. You have to have that right motivation and that right reward scheme in order
to stop the data zombies.
Yes. There you go. Exactly.
That's it. That's good. Yeah, well, we got some good material for the roundtable now, too, so hang on for 1 minute, folks. We'll be right back. You are listening to DM Radio.
News travels fast in the healthcare industry, especially online at healthdatamanagement.com. If you need the latest information and insight about what's happening right now or where the trends are moving, healthdatamanagement.com has what you're looking for. The only IT magazine in the field written exclusively by a team of experienced journalists, Health Data Management has captured numerous awards for journalistic excellence. In fact, healthdatamanagement.com has won the Best Online News Section Award from the American Society of Healthcare Publication Editors for 6 consecutive years. We cover topics including HIPAA, electronic health records, hospital information systems, e-health, clinical information systems, electronic prescribing, revenue cycle management, patient safety, strategic IT planning, and mobile technologies. Check us out online at healthdatamanagement.com.
Okay, folks, welcome back to DM Radio's special All Hallows Eve edition. My name is Eric Cavanaugh. With me is Jim Erickson, and our next guest is Renat Kashanchan. I hope I got that right. Renat, welcome to DM Radio.